Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Matt Weston with Battle Red Blog, and of course, the podcast you're listening to, Battle Red Radio. This is a two-part podcast with Kenneth L. discussing the Houston Texans 2019 draft class. In part one, we talked about Titus Howard, Lonnie Johnson Jr., and Max Sharping. In part two, we talked about Kahale Waring, Charles Omenihu, Xavier Crawford, and Colin Gillespie. Make sure to listen to part one if you haven't listened to already, and of course, rate, review, give the podcast 5 stars. Let's start the show.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
So the next player Houston selected was Kahale Waring, the Hawaiian, the tight end of San Diego State. I listened to Mark Vandermeer say it, and they said Kahale or Kahale, because I think it's Kahale Waring. I was calling Kahale.
The Kahale.
Yeah, that's what I've been calling forever. But I think it's Kahale, and I'm trying to do better about actually knowing what these people's names are, you know?
I don't think you ever need to worry about his name. He's a player that is never going to exist.
Well, it's kind of like I'll read books and like I'll learn these words, but I never actually hear them. And so I think I call, instead of saying like acquiescence, I said acquiescence for, you know, years or whatever until I actually heard the word in a movie or something new it sound like. So I'm trying to do better at it. It's part of the transformation process. But so Warren was selected in the third round. He had 0 catches last year. He played 0 games. He was expected to join a crowd tight end group of Darren Fellows, Jordan Thomas, and Jordan Akins. So, Kenneth, why did he have a lost rookie season? Is he just too hot and too much of a Chad for Bill O'Brien?
Bro, I think he is just too cool. I think he's too cool for the sport. I've said it probably about in every single article I've ever written. I've said it live. I've said it 1,000 times. The Texans did not want to draft Kahale Waring, however you say his name. Wherever the H is in that name, it is where it is. They wanted to draft Jalen Ferguson. He was their guy. They brought him in 4 separate times. They went to the Senior Bowl to watch him play. They brought him in for like a private workout. They went to his school. That was their guy that they wanted to draft. And the Baltimore Ravens drafted him at the pick right before. And so they were dumbfounded. They did not know what they wanted to do. And they just took the number one guy they had on the board and took Waring, and it made no sense, and he never played. And I don't think he'll ever play.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I really liked Waring, watching him, like watching his video after they selected him. Like, I think he's a guy who could block and pass catch. He can also really attack the middle of the field vertically. Like, Darren Fells doesn't necessarily do that. Darren Fells just like sits in between two guys and boxes out, makes quick catches. Fells is also a really bad run blocker too. And there's like that repass option and like all their counter and dart and power plays they ran, Fells became like just exhausting and unusable after a while too. So I am really disappointed that Waring didn't play. I don't think Waring's really ever going to play in Houston, but I think Waring could have a good career eventually. I just don't think like Bill O'Brien necessarily really likes him. Like, I know he had injuries before the season started and that whole sort of thing, but if they wanted to use him, they could have brought him on this year. And instead it was, you know, Akin some, and, you know, Thomas played a little bit too, but it was mainly just Darren Fells all the time, every time this year.
Like, yeah, I get the idea that you want to bring in players that are like, you just want to have the best athletes on the field. Like, give me the 11 best athletes and let's go, like, roll the ball out there and let's go play ball. But, like, you know, it's all about being healthy. Like, I don't care, like, if you can run a 40 faster than me. If you're hurt, it doesn't matter. You know, so I'm actually looking through his NFL Combine, like, and, like, everything that they wrote about him. They compared him to Todd Heap, which is a super impressive comparison. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a potential Hall of Famer.
And that's like a 94 in Madden 2004 right there.
Yeah, I mean, his strengths, the first word on his strength is chiseled. Like, any player that is chiseled is going to be pretty set up to be good. You know, I'm seeing words nifty, plays the ball in the air. Like, this guy has attributes, but if none of those were seen on the field, I think he might be one of these ghost draft picks that we have. He'll fall under, like, the Sam Montgomery of the group.
Yeah, I think the difference is that I could see Waring actually, you know, like, playing, contributing somewhere. I like Montgomery just being kind of, like, aloof and weird and never doing anything. Because I do like Waring still as a prospect. It's just weird, this organization, where there's certain guys that Bill O'Brien just does and doesn't like. And it just always kind of felt like that with Waring. Because, again, like, I'm sure he could have played sometime last year if they actually needed him. So we had a listener question from YSong20_again. And Kathy asks, what is Waring's role in this offense moving forward? And then another question from Texans_thoughts. Was his redshirt season a sign Bob already lost faith in him? Or will he find a way to contribute in a crowd tied in room? So kind of like, I guess you're not expecting anything from him going forward. Do you think the tight ends right now, like, I know Fells is a free agent, but with Thomas and Akins already there too, do you think that also complicates Waring's ability to have an impact for this team in 2020?
I'll answer the second question first. I don't think he makes the roster. I think he gets traded for like a sixth or seventh round draft pick, like during the draft. Something kind of aggressive that the Texans do to get him off the books and like bring someone else new into the fold. After the year and all the touchdowns that Fells had, I can see Deshaun Watson pandering to have Darren Fells. Just another guy who can like be the right place at the right time. Watson loves those type of guys. And that's why you kind of saw like Deonta Foreman play and get like his rookie season, because he was kind of like always in the right spot. And, you know, that also being in the right spot happens when you're, you know, on the practice field and like you're healthy. That just hasn't been the case for Waring so far. If he stays on the team, he will be one of those kind of like trick, not like trick plays, but he'll be kind of brought into like as an X factor. Like, we very matchup oriented. Like, we really want to exploit this player on the defense. We set them up with Waring and then like kind of let like the cards fold how they will. He's got what you want in a tight end in terms of like the intangibles. Like, he's a big guy. You know, 6'5" as a tight end, you can't really ask for much more. But it's just all about being available, being healthy, and then, you know, making the team. I don't think he makes the team this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he does play, one way he can really help the team. I mean, I don't think he's going to also make the team either, just because it just doesn't seem like he's a Bill O'Brien sort of guy, and O'Brien doesn't particularly like him. Also, it's amazing to be, you know, 6'6", 250 and have like a 10-pack like he does. I don't know how he does it. But with him, I think the one thing he could really help with this offense is by stretching the middle of the field. The Texans really didn't run a lot of seam routes or attack defenses and safeties like that. Whenever they did, it was like Will Fuller running a deep corner route to pull a safety or whatever to open stuff underneath. But like, Akins didn't attack that way. Fells doesn't have a lot of speed to attack that way. But I think Waring can do a really good job running, running seams or running posts and corners off of that to create like, you know, 25-yard catches. And I think that's a really important part of the field that the Texans offense just really didn't exploit throughout this entire season. Everything was sidelined, and it was also a lot of like quick, cute little passes to DeAndre Hopkins to create first downs that made him a less efficient player in 2019 as well. So, I mean, I do think there's a valuable portion for him. And I also don't think the blocking from Fells or Akins or Thomas is really all that great to begin with too. I think Waring could even be a better blocker than those three, but you know, it's just, I think he's not going to play, not because of a talent issue. I think it's just because of this like weird, you know, Bill O'Brien thing that's going on.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at he is kind of those Chad type of guys. Like, I just don't think he'll fit in with this locker room. I don't think he fits in with what O'Brien's looking for a guy. I don't know anything about his intelligence, but it's going to be probably one of the most interesting off seasons to watch him. Like, this will be such a great storyline, like, to see if he can actually be a guy. If Jordan Thomas is still unhealthy, that is Waring's meal ticket. The more that those guys can't play, the better of a chance he has, which isn't saying anything that he actually is talented or not.
Mm-hmm. So the next pick, I don't have anything else to say about Waring at all, but in the fifth round, the Texans didn't have a fourth round pick, but they had a fifth round pick, and I can't even remember at all where their fourth round pick went. I don't know.
Fourth round pick was part of all the trade stuff.
Yeah, I don't know which individual guy it went for though, because it wasn't the Stills trade. It was something that had to happen in 19. I really have no idea.
Oh my gosh, I think I'm blanking too. I can look this up pretty quick.
Yeah, I have no clue. Maybe it was for like Johnson Bademosi or something. But in the Texans have a fourth round pick, but in the fifth round, they selected Charles Omenihu, the defensive from the University of Texas. Omenihu had 13 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, 2 passes defense, 5 quarterback hits, and 3 sacks. And I alluded to this earlier, but whenever I watched Omenihu, I didn't really like him as a pass rusher, but that was because I was very myopic. And I looked at Omenihu as a typical edge rusher, a guy who rushes as a 5 technique against outside shoulder offensive tackle and is like a speed or rip and edge rushing guy. And he isn't that all whatsoever, and that's not what his strong suit is. But what his strong suit was this past season was as an interior pass rusher, as a 4, as a 3 technique, as a guy who only played, 20, 25 snaps a game, all mainly on pass rushing downs, and was able to use his length and his strength and his bull rush to be able, and also his ability as a stunner, to be able to create probably the most consistent pass rush they had in the interior, because Watt mainly rushed from the exterior throughout the season. And so I think he was a very big surprise for me, and it was just because of my own short-sightedness as well, too, and I watched him last year. So despite all this I said, were you surprised by how much of a pass rush he provided in 2019? Because I was.
Yeah. Oh, I also figured it out. So we gave the fourth round pick away. Do you have one more guess?
I have no idea.
Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, okay. There we go. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah. It caught me up. So for Charles Mindy, I went to Texas, was able to watch him live. Like, I always enjoyed his game. I didn't think he was that great. So I was really curious when I saw him get drafted for the Texans. Like, where are we going to put him? He's like a good defensive athlete. Like, that's just the best way to describe it. And him being able to kind of put together a lot of the pass rush was such a godsend for this team, because we, no Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt out, and Whitney Mercilus can only pass rush when those two guys are on the field. He really was kind of able to provide that spark that we needed. It definitely surprised me. It probably is one of those situations where he just kind of had to fit to the situation rather than like this is what his skill set actually is.
Yeah, I can see that. I do think his skill set is where they used him last year and it was the best thing for him. I think a good example of that too, before the season started, Seth Payne was on the podcast and he kind of talked about how defensive linemen in preseason look awesome because they play 7 snaps and they're just bull rushing over and over again. And they're not tired at all because they only play a few snaps and that sort of thing. And I think that's what Charles was last year. He only played 20 snaps. He didn't have to worry about being tired or exhausted. And even coming fresh and bull rush against these tired guards and was able to provide big spark as interior rusher. And, Reader was a good interior rusher until after the Chargers game or until after the Falcons game. And then he disappeared completely too. And so the Texans needed to find interior rusher. And it seemed like they did with those two through 5 weeks, but Reader disappeared completely. And a man who kind of lost some stuff too, as he had to play more and more defensive in the run game as well. But I think not having a tier rusher was almost not a disaster because of what those two guys did, but they kind of lost him as the year progressed too.
Yeah, it was one of those times where when he had to play a lot, he wasn't as great. When he only had to shine in a couple moments, he actually played really well. And so it kind of gives you an understanding of where he is in his talent. Like, he has the skills, and I don't think it's him being in shape. It's more that I just don't think he's talented enough to kind of be an every down guy. He's going to be one of those, he's on the roster, he plays on third downs, and he can kind of sub in, sub out, he'll play special teams, And that kind of is like what a Bill O'Brien guy really is. But I think he's exciting to see what he can do moving forward.
I think he's the anti-Angelo Blackson, where you don't want him on rundowns at all. You want him on pass downs specifically. Whereas Blackson, you don't want him at all whenever there's even a possible threat of a passing attack. And I think one of the problems
that just doesn't move.
Yeah, he just runs headfirst into a wall. But that is AFC Special Teams Player of the Month, Angelo Blackson, though, that we're talking down to right now.
Oh, yeah. But, big fist.
The hand of God. But Omenehu, the one problem I think that he has, or the biggest problem I think he has, is, you know, aside from the speed stuff and the edge rushing stuff, I don't think he's ever going to be a real pure edge rusher. But in the run game, he doesn't recognize run keys very well. And teams just, I mean, they destroyed him last year with trap and power plays where they were able to pull at him and ear hole a lot and then create really open rush lanes against him specifically. He was just late at recognizing those plays. And so for him to be anything more than like a third down interior pass rusher, he's going to have to do a better job at just recognizing run plays and be able to play the ball better in those situations. And I mean, I really don't care at all for him to do that. I think he's perfect being used in this facet. And I think if, you know, him being like an every down player, I think it's important for him, maybe as far as a contract goes. But I think about him, like where he can excel the most, I think exactly how Houston used him last year is the best way to use him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the Eagles won a Super Bowl with a bunch of linemen who were basically defensive linemen that were just one-trick ponies. They were really good at one thing, and they'd do that on the field. Then they'd leave, and then they'd bring in a guy for the right situation, and he'd do that one thing, and then he'd leave. And so, you know, you have to put him in a position where he's going to succeed. And, you know, run blocking, he's not big enough, he's not strong enough, and he was not able to process it fast enough this year. So it's only a matter of time where he kind of like learns those skills, but I think he needs to just continue to be good as like the sub in interior pass rusher on like 3rd and 15. And, you know, you can see him shine, and that will also take some pressure off of JJ Watt and whoever we bring in through the draft this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And we had a listener question from YSong20, and he asked,
"What's your?" I had a lot of questions.
Yeah, and never listened to the podcast before, and so I'm excited to send the link. But he asked, "What should Omenehu work on to become a future star and good pass rusher?" And I think he's a fine passer right now, fine pass rusher. But I think the one thing that he can do is develop a really good inside move instead of just, you know, bull rushing and long arming, that sort of thing. And I think if he can learn a swim move and just hang out with JJ Watt, like the swim move that Watt taught to Clowney, I think he'd teach the same, something similar to Charles as well too. Where if he can get an inside move and just use that long arm and get over the guard's head as a counter rush to everything else he does, I think he could become like a good interior rusher. And like a really good interior rusher, you know, is what, you know, 6 sacks or so, and you know, 15 quarterback hits. And I think he could do that after how much he's already done so far in his career.
You think he should train with Aaron Donald with knives?
That works out too. But I heard the knives are fake. They were a show, and they weren't real knives, well, which was sad.
I hope so. That'd be so dumb. I think for Omenehu, he's got to learn how to pair his hands and his feet. I think it's less about learning how to do like the moves than learn how to just like being able to disengage from like the defensive lineman while moving your feet. So being able to gain ground and push the pocket while at the same time creating separation between himself and the defensive lineman. And so that's kind of how like that next step needs to go, is more like, okay, he can swim around him, but it's more just getting the raw skills of, hey, I just need to get some room, and then we can work from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would work out as well too. And I mean, his arms are so long too, that's easy for him to create space, and even just like making contact first, I think will be very helpful for him. It's going to be hard, you know, rushing from that position just because it's so easy to be effective with different, you know, hands and everything else. But if they can give him a lot of like 3 Watt, like, you know, 4 eye rushes and on the, like in between a guard and tackle with, you know, Watt out there and maybe even Merciless, I think that will also really help him out too.
Yeah, I mean, if he has 6 sack seasons for the rest of his rookie contract, I don't think anyone would ever complain about drafting him.
For sure. I think he was a great 5th round pick. And I was very surprised by his production.
Yeah, I was looking at like the other 5th round picks, and I really don't like, I know a couple of the names, but there really wasn't anyone else that kind of stuck out around where he was. I mean, like, I know Mac Wilson was there, and there was a couple, like, offensive linemen, but he was kind of, like, I think he really had one of the best years out of, like, the fifth-round picks around around where he was drafted.
Yeah, I think the only guy who I think you can compare it to him would be Dre Greenlaw in San Francisco. He was one of the better coverage linebackers last year and filled in really well for Quan Alexander. But, yeah, I mean, everybody else here in the fifth round really isn't I mean, Darius Slayton had a really great year, though, too. So I think
Renfro had a good year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those four guys are probably the best fifth-round picks, though. And he was kind of a member of that. And he did have a really good year this past season in his rookie year. And I'm excited to see what he does going forward, especially if they can continue to use him how they have. So the next pick in the sixth round, the Texans selected Xavier Crawford, who already is on the roster. He was cut in October. Cool. He played for Miami and Chicago. So how long until he ends up playing for the Seattle Dragons or the Dallas Renegades or the San Antonio Defenders?
Is the Canadian League still a thing? Is that still around?
Yeah, they still have it. That's never going
to
go away.
Send them up to Canada.
Yeah, that would work out well, too.
I actually remember, like, hearing a couple things on, like, the Reddit streams and things from Twitter where so the Texans signed a rookie free agent that went undrafted, and that went to the same school as Xavier Crawford, and that guy was actually outplaying Crawford throughout the entire off season. So maybe they drafted the wrong guy from Central Michigan. I mean, obviously neither of the two made the team, but like imagine being like a draft pick and then getting outplayed by someone on your own, like the same position from the same school.
Yeah, especially not being drafted as well too. And I think this is another guy who was selected just because of size. You know, like Crawford's tall, but he was slow. And you know, maybe in a defense that's more, you know, zone turning or something, he could do something going forward. But he just seems like a guy that's selected because of athletic traits, not because of him being particularly good at anything at all whatsoever.
No, yeah, they wanted him. They picked him purely as like, okay, we don't really know what's going to happen at the slot. Like, who was the guy that we took in free agency that had three names? He didn't make the team. We cut him.
I don't know.
I can't remember, but he was like this guy's backup. Xavier Crawford was 100% meant to be a slot receiver, a slot corner. Just never developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the sixth round, and you kind of never know. The whole point of sixth-round picks, though, is to have a couple of them, and they're just scratch-off tickets, you know, that cost a dollar that you buy whenever you have some change in your pocket after you've bought, like, you know, bang into bananas or something.
Lottery shot.
Yeah, so the last pick was Colin Jalaspia, and I've never seen somebody that Texans fans, you know, like, I've never seen somebody, like, as who's played as little as he has and for Texans fans just to completely love him. He was selected in the seventh round to play fullback and also special teams. He didn't play that much fullback. He played less than 20% of the team's offensive snaps, but he played more than 60% of their special team snaps. And this was the year of the fullback in 2019 in the NFL. There was a resurgence of the position with Kyle Juszczyk almost catching two touchdowns in the Super Bowl. You know, CJ Ham had a great year. Dude, Derek Watt made the Pro Bowl. The Ravens fullback is awesome. I think it's Ricard. He also plays defensive tackle too. The Patriots power run scheme fell apart without James Devlin as well. And so even though it was the year of the fullback, the Texans have used the fullback before he tried to, it seemed like Jalaspia could have had more of an impact offensively. You know, he had that really big block on Watson's zone replay against Buffalo in the division round two. And he's also a better run blocker than Darren Fells is as well. So do you wish that he played more offense in 2019? Do you expect him playing more offense in the future?
I think 20% is a really good number for him. I really like when this offense goes five wide, and going five wide with Colin Gillespie does not sound like a really good option.
The Patriots will do it sometimes. The Patriots will actually go five wide with Devlin, yeah, which is hilarious.
I actually do remember they do that. They did that against the Titans, and they covered him up with like a defensive lineman. They put like a nine technique defensive like outside linebacker on him, and just like as you know, if you're going to throw away a player, we're also going to throw away a player. And so, I could see Bill O'Brien doing that. But I think like him being in the offense, being a part of the system, he basically all he did was those Ryan Griffin blocks where he would start from one side of the line and just go block the weak side of the other side. So he did his job. I love him out on special teams. You know, a guy that can kind of just take up several roster spots by just kind of like playing every single play on special teams. You have to have a couple of those glue guys in the locker room. I don't think they have selected another player who is more of a Bill O'Brien type of guy than Gillespie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, he played, I'm looking at it here. I know he played a few more snaps in the postseason, but he played only 13 offensive snaps last year, but he played 64% of the team's special team snaps. And the Texans had a top five special teams last year, and they've done a really great job the past two seasons after it being one that continued from, you know,
abysmal
from, you know, the beginning of the decade with Kubiak and Marciano, where it was always bottom five. They've done a really good job at finding players who only play special teams, like, you know, Mingo, like Crossen, like even Bademosi before, even though he's not on the roster anymore. But
Tywon Jones.
Yeah, Tywon Jones is another great example. But just like guys who only play special teams, and that was him this past season. Weissong had the same question. You know, do you want to see more lead blocking of him in this offense? And I mean, I personally do. I think if you're going to run that, you know, that trap play and that dart play or counter, however you want to call it, whenever they pull Fells, the linebacker, I'd rather see Gillespie run it because he can actually make blocks and clear out linebackers. And he made more blocks in the run game than I think Fells did all season in those 13 snaps that he had. And so I think the potential is here for him to be something more than that. The question is going to be if, like, he can seep out to the flat and make one guy miss and you pick up some receiving yards too. But even then, who really cares? If he can be a good lead blocker and kind of do a lot of things that Fells does, I think we'll help this offense next year because, you know, the Texans do love to run the ball so much.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I would love to see it, especially if we're going to go left to right with what our 2020 offensive line is going to look like. Laremy Tunsil, Max Sharping at left guard, Nick Martin at center, you're going to have Zach Fulton most likely at right guard, and then Titus Howard at right tackle. That is not a run-blocking offensive line. It's more geared towards pass blocking. Mm-hmm. So if you can have a player on the field dedicated to moving the defensive line, hitting one of those linebackers, and helping out that offensive line, that will do wonders for the run game. You know, it doesn't really take much for us. We're going to get 1,000 yards. Like, there's going to be a 1,000-yard running back on the team almost at all times, just the way that Bill O'Brien suffocates the offense by running the ball. But having that tight end, bringing someone in who can block, I think that's such a huge attribute that this offense could use.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. And I mean, I think for me, more than the offensive line, it goes back, which is a good point. I do think it's the offensive line better super pass blocking than run blocking. But I think, and also the way they use them, too. But I think just how bad Fells was in the run game, with all those cute little plays they use with him pulling, and just having somebody could do more than that in Gillespie, I think would make a really big impact too next season. And so I do think that he can do more things than just play special teams. And I personally hate the pick in the 7th round because it's like it's a lottery ticket. You can just sign him after the draft ends because he's from Texas. He'll probably wouldn't go there anyways. And they use a draft pick on him. I think it definitely has worked out better than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, it was kind of like a head scratch. Like, why don't we take a position that we do have like a weakness in? You know, like we did for like Julian Davenport, where like he was just a huge at person that like had no skills whatsoever, but like, you know, we could use him. And then he played a little bit.
Hey, he was a 4th-round pick. He had some skills.
Yeah, I still. Oh, he was a compensatory 4th. He was a late 4th.
And he was pretty good in Miami last year too. He's definitely left tackle and. I would love to see Davenport. I think Davenport may start there again next year, too. I was heartbroken when he broke his leg in practice.
Oh, I was so over Davenport. I didn't think he had any of the skills to play in the NFL. Surprising. I mean, good for him to take over for Laremy Tunsil. I mean, the guy is huge. I just didn't think he fit. Like, I didn't think he was an NFL caliber guy.
I mean, his rookie year was definitely better than his second year because the whole right tackle thing really kind of screwed him up. And for him, right, it was just getting stronger, and he was making good one versus one blocks, and was competent, you know, protecting for, you know, Taylor Heinicke and stuff too, and that right tackle switch in 18 was just so unbelievably stupid, but I think he's better than every single person in the world's given him credit for, and I'll keep saying this until the day I die.
Yeah, you're defending him with your life, and I just can't. I didn't think much of him. Like, when he was here, I didn't see him at Miami, so I didn't really know. I don't really know how he played, but, I mean, it's good to hear. Good for him. Like, I didn't think he had too much. Like, his hands were so abysmal when he was here. But to finish off with Gillespie, I think it was an interesting decision to draft him. I think they just wanted to lock him in. Who knows how the seventh round works? But ultimately, I think it's like if we have to give the draft a grade, like how would you round out like the first year?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you too. Like what I would, I mean, I guess they got, you know, two potential starters in Howard and Sharping, and then nothing else has really worked out at all. Worked out, but so because of that, and like if you have to grade kind of a scale, I guess I would give it like a C+ or a B- for now. And I think more of it has to do with the fact that I think Howard and Sharping were fine. They weren't like great or revolutionary. They were fine players. They were better options than, you know, Sancho Henderson and Kelemente, for example. But they weren't like, you know, really spectacular at all. So I would give it, you know, I guess a C+ in this case.
Is there anywhere where you can find like, okay, how many plays did each team's rookie draft class like participate in?
You can probably, I mean, I guess the best way to do it would probably go to Pro Football Reference and then do approximate value, and you can kind of add it all up because it takes into account like, you know, snap counts and the ability and the performance of the team as well too. I think the two best draft classes though were probably Kansas City's and San Francisco's, and so Kansas City took Hardman, Thornhill, Sanders, Fenton, and Thompson from 2 through 6, and all those guys had big plays for them throughout last year, and they all, and that's without first round pick because they traded for Frank Clark, and they still had a really great draft just with their 2 seconds, a third, and 2 6. The only guy who didn't play for them was Nick Allegretti, their 7th round pick, but they had a really great draft last year.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's definitely a Brian Grain draft, to tell you the very least.
Yeah, not having a first round pick and almost making some things stick, but
unbelievable.
So, what grade would you give the Texans 2019 draft class?
You know, I'm going to hold out on hope with Lonnie Johnson as much as I'll riff on him. I think the Colin Gillespie was a good the ceiling with this draft is, you know, how we can develop Titus Howard, and then if Kahale Waring can actually play. Just him playing raises the grade. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm stuck at a B-. I don't think it's bad. I don't think we, you know, tanked early. That would kind of give us like the C grade in my mind. So I think like a B-, there's a lot of potential, but there's also a lot of easy ways where this draft class just like eats shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the offensive line, I don't think Sharping or Howard are going to be bust at all. I think they're going to be consistent stars moving forward. It's just everything else after the fact, you know, like can Omenehu be more than a 3-sack guy? Can Waring play at all whatsoever? Will Johnson ever be anything more than, you know, one of the worst cornerbacks in football? Yeah, those are all really valid questions to have. But I do think of the offensive line, I think both Sharping and Howard can be consistent starters moving forward. Again, I just don't think they had, you know, they weren't super impressive their rookie years, but it's a hard thing to come into playing, you know, two different spots each and coming into kind of like a weird environment for this season. I think next year they'll be even better though.
If I ever was like a draft, you know, a general manager in charge of the draft, the way I would always organize my draft is I'm going to say each year we're just going to focus on one position. We're going to, and these guys will be together. They'll grow up together. Like they'll do everything together. They'll hold hands and go to the shower. But like for the next 5 years, these guys like play together. And so like great example this year, like we'll draft Max Sharping and Titus Howard. And then we have two linemen. They'll run together for the next year. And then the next year, let's draft two corners. And so they kind of play in tandem together. And then and you kind of, like, can guarantee you have two players that can, like, grow. And, like, if one does really good, then, like, you are guaranteed with one. But, like, if one doesn't, like, succeed, at least you have someone else to fall back on. It kind of obviously has its pros and cons, but that's like how I would approach the draft. Kind of like go big or go home on each position each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I guess it kind of depends on what the hopefully that your needs meet. You know what the strengths are in the draft at the in the draft at the exact same time as well too. But yeah, I mean, everything this year worked out better than I thought it was going to entirely. I think a lot of that has to do with Watson being spectacular, but even the offensive line and both these player selections. And I guess just also, like, at the same time that the context that they were taken in, I think it was, you can make the argument that both these players were bad selections because of the context, just the fact that Howard couldn't play left, Sharpen couldn't play right. They had moved them around, and partly because of that, and the Khalil sign leads to the, you know, the first round picks, the second round pick that gets traded for, you know, Laremy Tunsil too, and what's eventually going to be like a, you know, $18 million year contract for him. And so I understand the argument, but I do think that's kind of, I would say this, you know, not entirely, I don't think that's correct or truthful. And I think the fact that they got two possible consistent starters in the first two rounds is exactly what Atlanta was looking to do. And they used two first round picks to do so. So I will like the draft just because of that aspect of it.
Wait, but you did give it a C-, though.
Yeah, I said a C+ to a B-.
Oh, yeah, C+. All right, I'll give you, yeah.
And if Johnson was somebody else and wasn't one of the worst cornerbacks last year, I would feel a lot, I would probably give it a B+, but just because how bad, and then also the fact that, you know, Warren didn't play at all, even though it didn't entirely hurt him, though. So I have one last question for you before we go. And it was a listener question from Julian Maldo 18. And he asked the chances that Jacob Martin becomes an every down player. And I think this has a lot to do with the article Houston Chronicle put out that Martin's looking to get stronger this season so he can play all three downs. Would you like Martin to do that? Do you think he can do that? Or do you like Martin kind of like how we talked about Omenihu, where he's like great as just like an edge rusher, like a rip guy, who just comes in as a sub in sub packages as a pass rusher?
He has to. I mean, he's the only thing we actually got out of that draft. I mean, out of that trade, he has to become like a every down player, or else we look absolutely ridiculously stupid. I mean, we already do, but like now we have to embrace stupidity. Yeah, that's I think he has to become like a first, second, and fourth down player. You know. I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think he has to get stronger. And I mean, it's not even just like being an every down player, but it's also him as a pass rusher too. Like, I think a good model for him is someone like Elvis Dumervil, where if he has that, you know, because of his height, he has the ability to get underneath the guy's pads really well. And so if he generates like enough lower body explosiveness, he could bull rush tackles just because they're going to overset, they're moving back on their heels. And then because of how like tall and quick they're moving, he can use like a bull rush to be able to get underneath their pads and drop the quarterback. And a great example of that too is like Von Miller. Miller's one of the best bull rushers in football, and he weighs 255 pounds. And it's because of how his speed sets up in that bull rush. So, I mean, I think it's important for him to play three downs, but I think even two, like, it's just going to tremendously improve his ability to be more than, you know, rip edge rusher in the pass rush and actually have like an option to do something different than whenever guys get their hands on him.
I mean, he may be forced to because, you know, no Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt can't play every down. And then, like, okay, who else do we have? Like, Whitney Morris? Let's think, that guy can't stand alone anymore. We've seen that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he might be forced to actually have to play into, like, all these downs.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, too. So before we end the show tonight, is there anything else that you want to bring up real fast? Or do you have anything else you're just dying to say?
Just can everyone, if you're in Houston, just like if you see JJ Watt, just give him a kiss for me. Congratulate him on his wedding and tell Deshaun Watson that he's beautiful.
That's very sweet. I like that. You see the video of Deshaun Watson pulling up next to some fans in his car and they just lose their mind. That was very cute. That was very wholesome.
I think when I interviewed Deshaun Watson, that was like definitely the highlight of my life. And it has peaked from there and has definitely gone downhill.
No, every day is a gift, even though sometimes it's a pair of socks. I think for sure I'm gonna break this up into two parts. So this is gonna be the end of part two if you're listening, or of course you're listening. And then next week we're gonna for sure do a Texans offseason preview show, and I would like to do five most interesting teams, just because I want to talk about Miami next week sometime. But that's what to look out forward to for next week. That's the podcast for this week. But in the meantime, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battlebird Radio. And thank you for being on tonight, Kenneth.
Hook 'em horns.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.